Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. Thank you for joining me. I have a cup of coffee and I'm going to have a little wander around today. I've been thinking of a number of things. First is, I think, the Naked Englishman podcast, which I have been very lax recently. I'm going to do once a week. And I think what I shall do, at least for the short term, maybe in the winter it will be a bit easier. But once a week I work out what day is going to be the best. It seems that my Richard Vobes channel on YouTube has become once a week and a little irregular, trying to get all these things done. The pipe smoking one has been once a week all the time. And the English couple has become, well, as always, once a week. So I think I'm producing still quite a bit of content that's out there for people to listen to, such as the content may be. People may say, well, yeah, it's content, but most of it's pretty rubbish or shallow or whatever. That might change in today's Naked Englishman. I want to talk about something, I think the word is esoteric, but I may be wrong. It may be spiritual. So once a week sounds to me, so at least for the listener, they don't have to keep going to the web page and looking for it at different times. And in the short term, I'll try and do that. It's Tuesday today. I don't know that it's going to be every Tuesday. Is it Tuesday or is it Wednesday? Yeah, it is Tuesday. But I'll try and make it Tuesdays. You may find it changes. You may indeed find it changes. I wanted to talk today about I've spoken about these things before, of course. I was thinking about this yesterday and I was thrashing the thoughts through my mind. Somebody gave me a book, you see. I can't remember what it's called. Chaos of the Beasts, I think it was called. And it was taking the premise that the Bible has been misunderstood. And it's only now that we have, or scientists have, chaos theory, can it be fully recognised. Which is an interesting concept, okay, that the argument the author says is, really, we've had to wait the 2,000 years, or whatever it is, since the Bible was written, and it's not fully understood, because the themes in it have been, I guess, disguised in some, not necessary, I don't think it was written so deliberately so that we had to wait for chaos theory, but I think they're effectively saying that it's chaos theory that makes us, unlocks some of the concepts that we have perhaps forgotten, or makes it easier to understand. Hang on a minute, there's a little elderly cat coming over to me. Hello. Come over here. Yes, I know. You want to sit on my lap. Hang on a minute. It's going to go and sit on a chair up here whilst I do this. Itchy nose as well this morning. Itchy nose. Come on in. Here come. Just go and sit down and then I can chat. But before I sit down, let's just move the coffee a bit closer to me. Here we go. Alright. Get your claws out of my jumper. There we are. Look. You sit there and behave yourself. Yeah? Poor old cat. She's very elderly now, this one. She's a bit daft, but she's quite pretty, but she's very elderly. One of Julia's other elderly cats has died recently. It's death I want to talk about in this, as I'm taking my time getting to, which sounds morbid. Anyway, the point this guy was making was that there are various beasts in the book represent empires that have passed, and various characters in the Bible, of course, talk about beasts and dreams and visions and goodness knows what, really. And I was reading it, and then some of these books that get sent to me, I tend to read the first chapter, at the introduction, if there is one, and then the summary at the back. It gives me an indication of whether I want to then go and read the rest of it. And I didn't really want to read the rest of it because the author, in this case, was really saying we have to understand what the Bible is telling us. And I thought to myself, and I don't want to be offensive to anybody who is very much into what the Bible says, because I know some people take the scriptures very seriously, and this is not my intention to bash them. I said, but the author assumes, and he had, I think he was taking the New Revised Version, not even older version, so, it sort of made me a bit suspicious, really. It assumes, in other words, his starting point, he is assuming, is absolutely true. And I'm not convinced that it is. I mean, they say the Bible is supposed to be the Word of God, but it is an interpretation of different people who wrote the Bible, and not even at the time events even happened. And knowing what it's like trying to write a book myself, you are going to be biased, for one thing. You're going to find it hard to describe things exactly. Your memory may well be failing in certain things. The authors didn't have the internet to go and look them up, or AI or anything. I'm not suggesting that that would have been the best thing to do anyway. But you're assuming that the Bible is uncorrupted and absolutely spot on. I don't believe it is. I believe that there's good works in the Bible. There's good morals in certain places. There's some frighteningly horrible things as well. But I think it's a fascinating document for people to study and think about, for sure. But it isn't how I perceive the world. Anyway, it got me thinking, because I was chatting to Julia about this when we were having a cup of tea in between watering or trying to keep things going on the Biggleswick farm because of the huge drought stroke heat wave that we've had, where everything is really stressed. And I said to Julia, I can't conceive this. It just seems this is the just trying to remember his name, his argument, which I think he was an atheist, and he wrote a lot and did a lot of podcasts and guests on various shows, and his name's escaped me now. It'll probably come back to me. Anyway, his point was, and it's a valid point, I think, he simply says, look, I can't believe that, let's say man's been around for 100,000 years. In 100,000 years, God sits on the peripheral, having made man, watches him, doesn't interfere, lets them bash each other's brains out, abuse each other, rape the women, and all of those sort of things. And then 2,000 years ago, so 98,000 years goes along, and then he thinks, well, I better do something. And he decides to send his son as a visionary, a prophet, to say, look, you're all doing it wrong. This is how, this is what you should be doing. And instead of sending this son to a civilized part of the world, he sends them to some backwater in the Middle East, where they're illiterate and have very strange thoughts and dreams and ideas about what's good and what's not good, and sends his son down there. And as a result of that, they, you know, books are written, collected together, and you end up with the Bible. And he says it seems just a bit mad that if there was an all-thinking, benevolent God, that he would send his son over there rather than into any intelligent part of the world where people were literate, where they could question this character Jesus. They could write down what he says. They could experiment with his philosophy. And why do it right in the Middle East, where it's very barbaric, illiterate, with people with little understanding of things, and not related at all to people in the rest of the world? And I, you know, it's an argument that I would love to hear a counter argument to. Anyway, so I said it's, but I don't feel that the God, if you like, is outside of me. We're always looking for the God outside, aren't we? And this is what the Bible, in a way, and all these other texts sort of give us this notion that God is somewhere else. And, you know, he's our Father and all this stuff. He's outside of us. That's not my experience at all of what life is. I would say that we are all God itself, that life, the actual spark of life, is God. That is it. That is God. The fact that we are conscious, that we live, that there is nothing else. And then I was taught, and this is where I wanted to get to, because I find this quite fascinating, and that is what we see around us. And I've spoken about this, you know, really there, and I don't think it exists, that what we're sitting, the chair I'm on, the view in front of me, I don't think it exists. It exists in the same way that dreams exist, only it is a little bit more solid and a bit more regular and a bit more reliable. It is chaotic, but I don't think it's really there. And so put it this way, because I was trying to explain this to Julia, who I don't think goes along with this idea, and I dare say most people don't. But when my dad was alive, he, like me, was in the physical world, moving around, doing things, you know, ran his business and had a house and did his garden and all the usual stuff that we do. I looked after him when he had dementia. And at the end, it took him 5 days. He went into this death state. It took him 5 days to die. And we manned, I mean, it was quite Victorian, really. We sat, the family came and went and sat around the deathbed in the care home of all horrible places. And we waited. We wanted to be there at his side. He didn't know who, you know, he was gone mentally. He'd been gone for a long time and was very weak. He was emaciated. He was, they weren't giving him enough water. They certainly weren't giving him salt, Celtic sea salt and water. You know, care homes don't know how to get rid of dementia. It's a business. and it's a hideous business, and they don't care for people, really. They don't want to give them water because they only have the smallest skeleton staff, because they don't want to keep taking these people who can't walk, hoist them up and take them to the toilet. So they give them the minimum amount of fluids. They don't give them proper food. It's all processed shit. So there's no nutrients going in. And they, you know, they'll pump them through with drugs to make them calm down. It's a shit business. It shouldn't exist. They are evil people. Unfortunately, the workers who do it don't know. You know, they're just going along with the protocol. The protocol is evil, and the people who run these businesses, they're either ignorant, illiterate, barbaric, or don't care, or are just, you know, stupid. But anyway, that wasn't the point. There's so many ills in this world. What I wanted to say was that we sat there and we waited, and eventually Dad died. And so we watched him die. I've never seen anyone die before. And from our perspective, he had gone. That one minute he was in the body and he was breathing. He had no notion we were there because, as I say, he was just in this... in this long death throes, which was just breathing, basically. And occasionally he would sit up and look as if he could see something, you know, and you wondered if he was seeing angels or his mother and father or something joyous, and then he would sort of kind of sit down again. But he was in a very dreamy state, I suppose, or you know. He had no notion that anyone was round the bed. There was not, you know, absolutely. Anyway, from our point of view, one minute he was alive, the next minute he was gone. And it was so obvious, you know, when he's not asleep, he's gone. There's nothing. It's a shell. He's left, the spirit has left the building. Anybody who's seen anybody die or seen a corpse will know what that's like. It is obvious. And yet, you know, you can come across anyone who's had a pet or seen a dead mouse will know there is no spirit in the body. It's not just lying still. There's nothing there. It's left. Whatever, that spark of life, the God, if you like. Now look at it from the person who is dying's point of view. And this is what we don't do. This is what we don't imagine. And this is what I wanted to get to in this. Is while you're alive, you're in this physical world, and everything is there. It might be on occasions a bit dreamy when you go to sleep, and at the end with my dad, it was probably quite dreamy. But from his point of view, from the dying person's point of view, this is a solid, real, physical world in some way. When the spirit goes, this world no longer exists. It doesn't, it's no longer, you know, there'll be those that say, well, that's it. Once you're dead, you're dead. That's it, end of. That is not an option for me. There is no death in that way. That you get one life, bang, and at the end, your conscious spirit knowledge of whom you are, or the spirit that makes you alive, that the thing that is peering out, the you, the God, if you like, that's peering at your eyes, that's over? No. That is not possible, I don't believe. I don't see it. We're taught that. We're taught a lot of crap in this world by people who want to keep us down. No. So as far as my dad was concerned, same with my mother, and same with anybody who's died, one minute they're in this world exists, then it doesn't exist. Now, I don't know what their perception is, if anything, is following once they have died, passed, snuffed it, dead, whatever. But if we put ourselves into their shoes, and if I'm correct, which I believe I am, that the soul goes on, then one minute this world exists, the next minute it doesn't exist. So from that individual's point of view, the world doesn't exist. Did it ever exist? Was it only a mirage? Then work the other way. The soul, whatever it is, comes to this physical world, or is introduced to this physical world as a baby, when we're born. Prior to that, this physical world did not exist in their world. It's the same as taking a car journey or a train journey or a bicycle journey, any kind of journey. You start at point A, wherever that is, a town, let's say. Say you visited your parents or something. And then you get on the train and you get to the other end. As far as you're concerned, that other place does no longer exist. You can hold it in your memory. You can go, well, it does exist. But you can't see it because you've moved away from it. It does not exist in front of you. Does it mean it's not there? I don't know. I don't really know. And so what I'm trying to say really is, we know that when you look through a microscope sufficiently, that everything comes down to atoms, electrons and things whizzing around, and that there's space between those things and nothing else. So that a table isn't really a table at all. It's a table to us. But actually, when you look at it, you know, there's more space than there are the neutrons and things whizzing around, which give the illusion of space. In the same way that you can, I guess, move your hand, your arm, left and right, rapidly, it can look like one solid object, but actually it's only your arm moving quickly left and right. Do it quickly enough and it can appear to be a solid object all the time you're moving. When you stop, it ceases to be that space that it was taking up ceases to be solid. If the electrons and atoms and whatever else there is stop whizzing round, the table would cease to be a table. So therefore, does it really exist? Are the neutrons and things the only thing that really exists? And is you know, what are they? Are they really the God particle? Anyway, I know I've taken a long time to get there. I'm enjoying the sunshine, although it does get very hot. But does all this exist? Okay. And so the next question is, if it doesn't exist, it's an illusion. It's a bloody good illusion, but it has to be here for us to have this experience. Are we, this is, I suppose, the big question, that during the experience of being in a physical body, and we have a physical world to engage in, just as when you're in a dream state, you have a dream world to engage in. Can you change the illusion? In other words, you get into this whole business about manifestation and creation, you know. Because if, again, you take the premise that actually God is not outside of you, but you are God and you are creating this illusion, this this dreamlike physical world that seems incredibly real to us as we're awake. When you go to sleep, the physical world sort of disappears, doesn't it? Has it disappeared? I don't really know, because I'm asleep. I can't tell you. People will tell me, oh, you're lying in bed, you're snoring, Richard. They'll tell me that, but I don't really know that even they exist. We only perceive things from our own perception, from our single viewpoint. So how do you know any of this even exists? Sorry about sniffling on the microphone. And so the question is, can you change what you have been dealt with? And then, as I say, you get into this sort of manifestation. Well, if the one thing, I guess, there's a number of things here, and I know that I don't want to go on for more than 30 minutes, is... I've lost the thread now, and time is ticking. Can you change it? Can you change what you're doing? Well, if it's not real, it seems to me entirely plausible then that you can. That the only way you can change it is with your thinking, because it is your perception and your thinking, the thing that we have that animals and any other creature on this so-called illusion doesn't have, is this ability to think the way we think. Yes, they experience life and they're in the now and they deal on an immediate basis. But we have that insight to deeply think forward and back, have memories, conscious memories, and we can plan things and what have you. So maybe, and there's loads of books about, you know, Think and Grow Rich and Cast Out Your Mind and Words Are Spells and all those sort of things about how you change the experience that you have here so that your physical world can be more enjoyable rather than the very chaotic and torturous for many people. Or for many people, boring, tedious, hard. And what is it that's doing that? So maybe I shall leave that till next time to think about with my pipe, my conduit of thought, and bring you my conclusions or my ongoing thinking on that process. So I shall leave you with the idea that what I want to leave you with the idea is, put yourself into the person who is at that moment of death. When the one minute the world exists, the next minute it doesn't, from their point of view. It no longer exists. So the question I'm asking, is it like television? That the viewer sitting in the armchair looking at the television program switches it off, but they still exist. They don't exist for the people on the television. Or let's say it's what do they call it, FaceTime or something, a video chat program. That's a better way of looking at it. So for a moment, there you are talking to somebody over the internet, and all the time that you're chatting to them on the screen, you exist. Then they say, okay, I'm off now, I'll talk to you later. They say goodbye. And to the people talking to that individual, they no longer exist. They've gone. To the individual, the other one, the people he was talking to have gone. The chat thing is over. He still exists. So that's what I'm saying. The person dying has just changed from one to another. But did the place that he was in ever exist? Or maybe it just is still here and you go somewhere else, which is what most people believe. But I'm challenging my listener to the thought that maybe that this doesn't exist because we can only, I don't know if anybody is out there, that I am the single thing that there is. As indeed, I would argue that you, listening to this, probably are unable to prove that anything else really exists because you can only see it from your single viewpoint. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you soon.